Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before, and we're here today with Angus.
Hello.
Baylor.
Hi.
Jeanette.
Hi.
Lisa.
To infinity and beyond.
Cassandra. Wrong series. And I'm Justin, and today we're watching Doctor Who. Which Doctor Who is it we're watching, Jeanette?
Fifth Doctor.
Fifth
Peter
Doctor,
Davison.
Peter Davison.
Yes.
And so this is from 1982. It's Black Orchid.
Yes.
So why did we select Black Orchid?
Black Orchid I chose purely because it's a two-parter, so it's nice and easy to watch. It's not a typical, probably, Doctor Who episode, and it was criticised for being a little bit too niche, but I thought it was reasonably fun. Peter Davison was Doctor from 1982 to 1984.
Yep.
He did three seasons, squeezed them in, I guess. What did he only do two? He was the youngest Doctor at that stage.
Yep.
He'd made his name playing Tristan Farnham in All Creatures Great and Small World.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yes, he was Tristan. So he was considered a bit hot. He also, of course, was the dish of the day.
Three series.
That's where I was from. That's the only other thing I've seen him in.
Yep.
In fact, that's the only thing I've seen him in, I think.
Sorry, go on.
Oh. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the BBC TV series.
In Millie Ways.
In
Millie Ways.
Okay.
Because he was married to Trillian. Sandra Dickinson was his wife, and the mother, of course, of the Doctor's daughter.
Oh, yes.
Georgia Moffat, who's also the Doctor's wife.
Yes.
So we cannot talk about Peter Davison without talking about Georgia Moffat.
It's almost like we need to get that over and done with. It's like such the cliche. It's like, get it out, move on.
It is indeed. His daughter played the Doctor's daughter in episode of David Tennant and went on to marry David Tennant, for anyone that doesn't know, I'm sure. Which apparently led to a very amusing speech, Father of the Bride speech.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah.
Peter Davison has done a lot of fan stuff. He's not just gone, like, done all the convention circuits and been very committed to that, but he's made a couple of hilarious little short movies about going to conventions. I think one was about him running late, and then the other was, of course, for the 50th anniversary of the Five-ish Doctor's reboot, which I really would love to do. We probably won't get time tonight, but I would love to do that at some point because it's such a good-natured, fun little movie. So
it transformed your view of Colin Baker a bit, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It did. My view, and it's not an uncommon one, is that Doctor Who was on a downward slope by the time Peter Davison took over. And for some people, they really love the Davison years. There's some very strong episodes. Apparently, I haven't seen much of them because Davison took over when I left home. So you
didn't watch them when they were out originally?
No, I didn't really watch them when they came out originally. And there's still Davison stories I haven't seen. This one I watched. So he took over in January 82. That means that they would have started screening in Australia in winter because they always screen in winter. And I left home in August 82. I went overseas. So I probably watched a few of his stories because I'm looking at the dates here, March. I would have watched a few of the Colin Baker ones when I was working in England. There was a chef in the pub I was working in 1984 that used to let me go into his room and watch. He'd leave it set up for me, the video set up, so I just had to hit play. His room stank. So I'd sit in the door I could not breathe in the room. So I'd sit in the doorway and it was just too uncomfortable and it wasn't worth the discomfort, so I gave up after trying to watch a few episodes. So this was where I was sort of moving on.
So how many people have actually watched Peter Davison as Doctor Who?
I think I might have seen one, like, a few years ago. I think, no, it was like 10 years ago for the 50th anniversary. Either you had, like, one or two serials from each Doctor. So I think I watched, I think it was the one in which, what's the character that everybody hates?
Adric,
the one where Adric dies. I think that's the one.
One of the most, the only companion ever to actually die in Doctor Who. That was such a shock. I saw that when
it
that
was
aired.
So coldly too, because there was a cyber ship crashing down to Earth, was going to blow up, and he was trying to basically change the course or something like that.
And the only way he could do it was by putting himself in the way of it, or something.
In harm's way. And so he was trying to do this mathematical calculation.
Because he was a boy genius.
He was a boy genius. His character intro was he was basically a maths wizard. He was a human computer sort of thing. He was trying to do the calculation and all that, and the time is ticking down, and the Doctor's like, get out of there, Adric, get out of there. And he kind of gets down to the point of zero in the clock and goes, oh dear, I guess I'll never know. and then the ship explodes and they roll credits.
And yeah. It was such a shock. Wow. I just remember the shock of...
Yeah, like you can't kill the kid.
No, and he is a kid too.
That's a Blake 7 ending, right?
Yeah.
But then again, it's not exactly well-liked.
No, he wasn't well-liked, but even so...
To be fair, he was only as poorly liked as anyone else.
Let's have a look at the other companions. Mm-hmm. We had Nyssa. Alien is aristocrat. We had Australian flight attendant Tegan,
who was one of the worst companions ever.
Voice work. And then there was a devious schoolboy Turlo.
No memory of Turlo. yes, I do remember.
Turlo. He's in the Five Doctors.
Yes, he was
special.
Working to stab the Doctor in the back or something.
He was often working with the Master and things like
this. Yeah.
Then American college student Perry Brown.
With the Harry cleavage of the Perry. Cleavage frame. That was about all they wanted.
She was there for Harry, the cleavage.
She was there for Harry Brown cleavage of cleavage family.
I've only seen like small clips of Perry's acting capabilities and just like...
plenty of clips of Perry's cleavage capabilities.
I don't remember anything about her besides her hair, to be honest.
So, who's actually appearing in Black Hawk?
It's Nyssa Teagan and Adric.
Right, so it's none of the later ones.
Yeah, there were three at once, which is what Chibnall famously decided, I'll do the same as what they did with, and nobody liked those three companions. Mm-hmm. Not a good choice to
Yes, it's probably the only decent one, really.
At the news, yes.
Yeah.
But they just didn't give her any...
No.
Anywhere near enough. No. She was underutilised. Graham just got bloody annoying. I just wanted to clock him half the time. You know, you've got a female doctor, and then you've got an old male companion to tell her what to do.
Yes.
And it's just like...
Yes.
None of the other doctors had an old wise woman on board to tell them what to do.
And is that because they kind of were going, oh, we don't want anyone that's the same that could possibly be a love interest because that would be a bridge too far with the changing gender or something? I don't know. But then that was never a thing with a doctor anyway.
No, Sarah Jane Adventures, she had three teenagers and the balance was excellent.
Yeah.
Her and the teenagers... And the relationship she had with those three teenagers was fantastic.
Yes, it was really well done.
Mentor.
Yeah.
Sarah Jane Adventures. Okay, the stories were a bit kiddie, but it was aimed at Jen.
Yeah.
But it was such a good series.
Yeah,
the characterisation was really good.
It was still better than the other series.
Torchwood. Absolutely. Yeah. I'd much rather watch
that. That's still better than Torchwood by a long shot.
Oh, Torchwood.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the first two seasons of Torchwood.
Yeah, first two seasons.
The first two seasons. Okay, we don't watch past the first two seasons because Children of Earth still has messed me up for life. I think we have this conversation every year, don't we?
So, Angus, have you ever watched Peter Davison?
So, I've seen, random clips on YouTube because they introduced another... recurring villain to the Doctor, the Rani.
That's
I think it was
Colin Baker.
That was Colin Baker, but that featured Perry as a companion, and she was atrocious. I've seen the Five Doctors story because that had all the previous Doctors minus Tom Baker, who only appeared in previous deleted footage.
Oh, he refused to be in it.
Yeah.
But then, what did they do with Hartnell?
They recast him to what they did with more recent...
The recent series, yeah.
But yeah, that story, I've seen a bit of the first story, which has him kind of walking around in a daze in the TARDIS, unravelling the Fourth Doctor's scarf as he goes. Those are the two stories I've seen. I saw a little bit when it was on TV. I vaguely remember the King's Demons story.
Oh, yes, I liked that one.
But I don't remember enough of it to be able to really... Yeah.
That's a one episode, isn't it?
No, it's three or four. Yeah. This is the only short. I think generally there are four episodes by the stage. Mm. They were all four episodes and this was the one exception.
Besides that, I have seen listened to an audiobook, I suppose, which features the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa, who's one of the companions I disliked more from the current setup. And it was them going to Mondas, the birth world of the Cybermen, as they're introducing cyberization to the society, directly following the death of Adric at the hands of the Cybermen. They were dealing with the trauma of Adric just dying
wasn't really dealt with at all in the TV series. Of course, they just carry on as though nothing's happened.
Yeah.
So what, that was the end of the season and then they started the new season going, off we go, you know?
And didn't address it, but in this story they really addressed that while battling... Cybermen being right there and having the opportunity to try and sabotage the Cybermen or prevent them from occurring before, and kind of doing that meddle with time thing to save their friend, and that battle and duality was, it made for a great story, and it's one of my favourite Cybermen stories today.
Eccleston was saying in that stage recently, some of the radio plays are so well scripted.
Yes.
He's saying, why aren't they drawing on this and using these script writers? Because they're so good. They've got this wealth of wonderful material now with the big finished productions.
Why don't they have an episode about that? Because that would just be awesome. But I've heard really good stuff about the audiobooks. I've heard the audiobooks are more superior than the actual shows.
Plays, yeah.
The big finished ones.
So, Lisa, did you ever see Peter Davison when he was on?
No.
I remember one thing about old Doctor Who as a kid, and I'm thinking, if you said he's 82 to 84, this might be McCoy. And there was some scene where some shrieking girl had been, companion I'm guessing, had been kidnapped, and they had her hanging upside down in a cave somewhere, and she was dangling upside down. And I just remember going, how could they do that? That would be really dangerous. Because in my mind, I would have been like a kid going like, you can't do that. The actress could be in serious danger during trying to film that scene.
Yeah, probably the stunt person was, yes.
If anyone knows where that scene comes from, that's the only scene in my mind, and then I would have just turned the channel over because I would have been like, oh, Monkey Magic's not on.
Baylor, have you watched any Peter Davison at all? Or?
No. Justin, I'm like 31. You're like 100. It was not airing when I was younger. And if it was, I was not interested. I was more interested in Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Winx Club, anything that was fun and cartoonish.
As opposed to Doctor Who.
Yeah, which is not fun and not cartoonish.
No.
Okay. The story's title, sorry, it took me a while to find, of the Big Finish production was called Spare Parts.
Oh, very apt.
Yes.
And yeah, it's a really enjoyable narrative.
Yeah, I really need to listen to some of the audiobooks. I've heard it redeems Colin Baker, for one, as a Doctor. Yeah.
Colin Baker has been a bit redeemed in recent years.
I haven't looked into any of the Colin Baker ones. I haven't listened to any.
I watched some of Peter Davison, but I didn't really sort of get into it. Even at the end of the period that
Tom Baker was tapering off already by then.
Mm. And so I'd sort of mostly stopped watching it by the end of Tom Baker's stuff. So I guess we'll get on and watch the show and see what people think of it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Start recording before we start venting.
So how did people enjoy The Black Orchid?
It almost, needs to be just explained.
Yeah.
After watching it, after having sat through it, after paying attention to it.
Yeah. I think there's some recent episodes that have too much exposition. This had not nearly enough.
They really just didn't
explain anything that was going on. It was just really random.
There's sort of a looming mystery, and you don't know what on earth the mystery even is.
Yeah.
So there were two episodes, and the first episode was just building up a mystery, and you had no idea what that mystery actually even was. Mm-hmm. And
even then, it was kind of obvious as well, the narrative direction. It was the sun disappeared in Brazil and there's a stranger upstairs. It's gonna be the sun. So obvious.
In terms of mystery writing, it isn't up there with that.
No.
And I wonder whether they made it in that era to make it a little bit Agatha Christie.
It's definitely Agatha Christie.
No.
One thing I found really interesting was, you know, so obviously George is running around causing havoc or whatever, and the first thing the Doctor says is, what is that thing? Like, new Doctor Who, recent Doctor Who, were never anyone alien, anything sentient. Yeah. Like, there were viruses that he wouldn't even call thing. Like, it's just, I found that really jarring. Yeah. That was like, oh, that's not a Doctor thing.
No.
Yeah, but obviously
And the most recent Doctor apologises to spiders before.
Yeah. Really quiet.
It immediately body shames, which is the problem.
Yeah.
Mm. It basically goes anyone that's deformed in any way.
That's the whole show.
The whole show.
Found it quite horrific.
Yeah, it was.
I said there was problematic. This episode has definitely got its problems.
Yeah. And he does a system of the south of Brazilian indigenous tribes as well, which I was going to go on a limb and say that no Brazilian tribe actually does that. They just made it look more foreign than
at least they weren't playing with elements of, you know, tribal magic of that.
Yeah, that could have been a Yeah.
But also, he smuggled something into the floorboards out of his pocket. Was that just was the key?
That was the key. Okay.
The key. Yeah.
So and that's why he could have one roll in his of paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
why did he have matches? If he was so dangerous, how did he have matches in his...
Yeah. Oh, it would be
for the smoking.
Yeah, of course,
the smoking, and it would be, gas lamps, it would be pre-electric.
Yeah, but even then, I would imagine you'd keep them outside the door.
You wouldn't expect someone to go, oh, I can't get through this door, so instead of trying to ram it open, I'll just set the whole house on fire.
Yeah.
He would have died of smoke inhalation before he got that door.
Before he got that door.
They all ran upstairs and ran back downstairs for a moment through that smoke, and, like, there was maybe a cough or two.
Yeah, I know.
And somehow they could. One was able to climb onto the roof while the doctor had to run through the smoke infested house.
Ran back through the smoke that he wouldn't run through before.
When the fire was probably not as severe.
And I feel like there would definitely nowadays be a nod to, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that, or, oh, look at you, sort of thing. Like, basically calling out that silly moment. But there was just nothing.
It took itself
way too seriously.
It did. Definitely did.
And, yeah, thanks for making me sit through 10 minutes of cricket.
I thought
that was the best part.
Like a comparison.
Yeah. I came here so I didn't have to watch cricket.
I like that.
Oh, you like cricket, okay.
But the other thing is, as well, it's interesting that if it was done today, that montage would have everything that was just filmed just in a much shorter span of time.
Yes.
30 seconds.
I mean, we saw it with Matt Smith. He did the soccer game.
And it did drag on. This was such a filler episode. And it felt super low budget. But that gown that Lady Cranley's wearing, the fancy dress gown, was made for this episode.
Jeez, that's where the budget went.
That's where the budget went. And that was used in The Girl in the Fireplace.
Oh,
and it's been used in movies. That gown has survived for a long time.
I was going to say, I've seen that gown before.
Which one's Lady Cranley? The mother.
The mother dressed up like Marie Antoinette.
Yes, for the party. That's hilarious.
They had Marie Antoinette actually wear that later on down the track.
That's hilarious.
Madame de Pompadour, not Marie Antoinette.
I think it's really interesting that whenever there's like spaceships and stuff, I glaze over, but whenever we're talking about costumes and stuff, you're just like, whoosh.
You see, the costumes went over my head, the spaceships.
You'd be like, well, we need a good slow-mo montage of a spaceship.
How was the acting?
Interstellar.
What did people think of the acting?
It was
so the plot was convoluted and a bit of a mess.
I feel like the acting wasn't the worst. It wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst. It was just the script writing.
The script writing was... Well, most of the extras, like, they were all really well-established British actors. They were all well-known.
I recognised the younger brother, the one that wasn't...
Where's he from?
He was in so many things.
Wings.
Yes, he was in Rings.
And that's where I recognised him from.
There was a British TV show.
Characters were better actors than the main actors.
By far,
They all looked like they were out of, like, Midsommar Murders or, you know, the Christie TV shows on the BBC.
They would be in all those things.
Yeah.
He still was acting up to quite recently. He always played toffee characters. Rings is a World War One British
fighter pilot. And a lot of fighter pilots were cavalry officers who, of course, were rich toffs.
So. And he's the rich toff. I don't know if he could do anything else.
He looked like Joel Edgerton or someone like that. Every time I kept going, who does he look like? And I was like, no, I keep thinking of modern actors.
Did you watch that thing they made about the scandal that Life of Brian generated? Like a docodrama.
What was it called? Holy something or other?
He
played Malcolm Muggeridge in that. Or the Archbishop, one of the other.
He was one of the main characters.
The old guys.
Old guy.
He was one of the two old guys in the talk show.
I can see that.
Saying, oh, you know, and then that turned out they hadn't actually watched the film.
Oh. Of course.
Yeah. So how was Peter Davidson as the Doctor?
The authority.
The look on her face.
Your neck cringes.
Yeah. I think Lisa said it well with the fact that he just wasn't, like, there was no consideration or considerate attitude shown towards anyone that was out of the ordinary and looked a little bit,
He was the posh doctor, I think.
Yeah,
he just seemed like he came from money. So everything was beneath him.
Oh, that's not very cricket.
He spent most of the two episodes just walking around on the periphery.
I'll be honest, there's a David Tennant episode, which is the Angels in the Phone Box one. The Angels Have the Phone Box or whatever it is.
I barely
have any of him.
Yeah.
And he's still fantastic.
Mm. Yes, yeah, absolutely. That timey ribbly wobbly.
Yeah.
That's one of his greatest.
Definitely the writing for the Doctor.
The writing at this stage wasn't great.
I don't think the writing was particularly good. Final years of Tom Baker. It was all just pretty downhill.
It's on a very steep downhill.
And Sylvester McCoy sort of maybe picked up a little bit, but not.
I think it did.
But Sylvester McCoy, I felt even he came across as a bit bland and not having a built character.
Oh, I thought he did.
It was brought by the actor alone. Yes. But,
I felt like when they were kind of doing that thing where they're like, oh, we're going to arrest you because we're doing you for murder, and he's just sitting on the couch going, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I went, that felt really Christopher Eccleston's Doctor, where he just kind of go, whatever, you stupid apes, let's do this,
I think that was just very realistic overall.
He just checked out.
I would have done that too. I would have been like, okay, fine, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, and I think that was probably the best. That was the one part where I kind of went, this feels like a doctor.
Most of the modern doctors, I think, would have talked their way out of it before.
I felt like that was a real Eccleston reaction.
David Tennant would have given a speech. Matt Smith would have tried to disassemble a door with his...
talked very fast.
And Capaldi would have
put his angry rock and roll
on a tank for no reason.
So generally, Peter Davidson as the Doctor, he's sort of a bit of a tough Doctor, you said. He's a bit bland, I feel.
I felt he was a bit bland.
But then, is that the writing or is it the actor?
He can act. Mm. He's still acting. He's not a bad actor. And when you see him as himself, you think,
he's very charismatic,
Because he's famous for another series, isn't he?
Yeah, the series you mentioned.
Creatures Great and Small. Where he was good.
He played Tristan, is that
Tristan,
right?
The younger brother.
The younger brother.
The one that was always drunk and messing up and... the funny sort of comedy sort of almost character.
Yes, he's a comedy character.
So true. Yeah, he was so bland in this, and yet real life he's so charismatic.
I think you could definitely blame the director. The writing, it will always get better over time, but the direction, I think a lot of the acting could have been better with a better director. It's very similar to the prequels in Star Wars.
I was going to say, at the risk of delving into a territory where I'm not proficient. I was thinking Drink. this is like a George Lucas thing where
it's very reminiscent these of are great the actors, director but not yeah. giving the direction that they need and they're probably leaning heavily on the older actors or going can do this myself if he's a better actor now and in it or in shows that you've seen
he was
later
a better
on
actor before as well when he did
it's definitely director based and story based which is what a lot of
also I think it's probably
is.
There may be other stories that reflect his acting better as the Doctor.
I don't know how he was in the Big Finish production of Cuddlesome that you listened to, but in Spare Parts, I thought he was fine. And I went into that. I mean, it was Nyssa, so the companion that dressed in the blue and wasn't particularly...
Is it the same that's just doing the voices?
Yes.
Same Nyssa, same Doctor. Yeah, wow, that's good.
Yeah, they get the same actors. And I'm not a fan of Nyssa on the screen, but in the story she was okay. She was decent because they had that decent voice director talking them through it, going, okay, this is how you need to do this. This is how this needs to be done.
Mm.
And I had no objections about their performance for either character.
Probably better written too. And oh, yeah. The character doesn't just scream and faint at that.
Yeah. I like the idea behind Nessa. I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, someone from not Earth.
It was
nice.
Written awfully, yes. Like very atrociously.
Yeah. I wasn't sure because it was like you had Nessa and Anne in this episode, and I thought, oh, maybe because Nessa seems so deadpan and serious, it's like, oh, this is a chance for the actress to play screaming hysterical female. Because she wasn't doing any of that in the show. Like, Nessa wasn't doing that. It was all Anne, wasn't it?
And they've played with that story element before, because they did it with the second Doctor in The Enemy of the World. Patrick Troughton beat the Doctor and literally...
The dictator
in control of the entire planet. And it was brilliant because he was playing those two radically different roles. He put on like a Spanish accent or something like that for his other role, but like it was kind of from a like sci-fi settings. It was kind of more just an accent as opposed to him.
Yeah.
But he was a good actor.
Patrick Troughton was able to do both and bounce
between the two, and it really, really worked well, and it's a brilliant story.
Yeah.
To me, I kind of think, you think Patrick Troughton, charisma. He doesn't look like the dashing, sexy doctor that Peter Davison was, but oozes charisma.
Yes. Who's Patrick Troughton?
He was the second doctor.
He plays the recorder. So,
that episode, the magic
the little
man.
Guy.
He was the one who did the... That, it was... What episode did we watch? It was the tomb funny one. It was a tomb one, yes. Yeah. Actually, yeah. And he was great in that episode. He was one of my... It's probably been one of my favorites.
Some of his lines, too.
Oh, my God.
I do love to watch the experts at work, don't you?
And just had... You could tell everyone was having a lot more fun.
I'm just not going to bother to act or do anything with the story. I'm going to stand and fill my face. And that's literally all he does. He just stands there and eats.
Really?
What's the point of his character?
Yeah.
They obviously didn't know what to do with him at
all. In the story,
And that's kind of a lesson, like we had said about how they tried to do that with recent Doctors where they'd have the three companions and they weren't gelling off of each other.
No.
And it was like a replication of this era where we had the three companions.
Too many companions.
And the original era feels very much like the Davison era.
Even the parallels with the main actors.
The
outfits are really similar too.
I think this Doctor would do really well with an anime series if everything was transferred over to anime instead.
Because they could replace all the footage.
It's not just that as well. This one felt very slice of life-y and a little bit detective-y and stuff, and I just feel like with an upbeat soundtrack that didn't drag on and stuff, you can still get that kind of slow moving that they clearly want to, but also get a much better story written.
I thought you were thinking Magical Girl style anime.
No. I'm legitimately thinking like Samurai Champloo sort of thing, which is the same writer of Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff. Miyazaki even would be really nice, where it's just like, because they have still moments where there's just nothing in between a clap kind of thing.
I never thought about Davison wandering around through the hallways and opening cupboards, you know, thinking of that through the lens of like a Studio Ghibli film where it's like wandering around, walking down the street and, you know, fetching pails of water.
So in Japan, there is a word for the silence between a clap, and Miyazaki, one of my favourite quotes that he's ever done is he claps three times, right? And it is the silence between the claps that he tries to represent within his movies.
Wow.
Because it's the silence that helps tie the clapping together. Mm-hmm. And that's how you know that you're clapping. And so that's what he does with his movies. And so maybe they tried to replicate something similar. Western... Yeah.
To be fair... In terms of applause this episode would get, it would get a slow clap.
Three slow claps.
No, it's the gap between the claps that it gets.
There's so much clapping at the beginning with the cricket. It's like they're just constantly clapping.
Yeah.
Everything. It's got annoying.
It's very Western media. Yeah. Like where it's continually trying to go.
It's very 80s. Yes.
It's very, very 80s.
The assistants, too many of them, you think?
They weren't well written.
Better.
Yeah, I couldn't really get any characterization from them.
No.
I thought one was from outer space and there was her brother.
No, no, he's unrelated. He's also from outer space. But
oh, okay. Well, I don't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine. I thought he was like a brother, and I'm like, no. Oh, great brother-sister rapport. No. Love it.
No.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Yeah. No, it was funny because Nyssa and Adric were both introduced in Tom Baker's era.
At the end.
But Tom Baker didn't want Nyssa in the show, and so basically said, I'm going to like leave early if you insist on having this person who cannot act be here. And so
I thought maybe it was Nyssa was
in the story. Yeah, basically, but he was leaving at the end of the season. So he's just like, I can walk early if you really want me to. And so she was in a story earlier on in Tom Baker's final season, and then wasn't in any of the other stories. She didn't climb into the TARDIS at the end of the episode. She stayed behind on her planet. And then as the Doctor regenerated, it was just like, and here's Nyssa again. I was like, no, why?
I don't like that she was the stock-up alien, though. Like, how barbaric about trains. Trains are amazing, lady.
Yeah.
Trains are cool.
I guess the cliche would have been to have a real goofy, quirky alien girl, you know? And I guess they tried to go against type.
I would have much preferred a person going, what are these shiny things on the ground? That's crazy. I'm going to go check it out. And then the Doctor do a PSA of, you must look both ways before walking across the train tracks.
Yeah.
Like that old thing.
Yeah.
But it's not the first alien companion they had. No, Zoe, second Doctor.
Yeah, and she was great. She was really...
She was the same as Adric. She was a human computer. Her ability was very, very quick maths, but started with no emotion. She was very emotionless. She was very flat because she was a computer. And she was, like, genetically engineered to be that role, or, like, taught from a very young age to not have emotions, and so was emotionally stunted. But over the course of the Second Doctor's stories with Zoe, she becomes more and more human.
Yeah.
And develops as a character, and there's growth
you
with
mean
the
more
character.
And more of a scream queen.
No.
She was tough.
This is the thing. The Second Doctor stories were actually wrote
Zoe
strong
was a
women.
Good companion. So,
the companion in Tomb of the Cybermen was more of a screaming companion.
That was Victoria.
That was Victoria,
yes.
But that was also her second story.
But also she was manipulating things. She was manipulating things and using that screaming, crying girl thing as a ploy.
It was used with sarcasm as well. Yeah. She's like, oh, well, I guess I'm just here, you know, because I'm just a girl, aren't I?
Yes.
And she was like stalking the villain, I guess, and going, I know what you're doing. I'm watching you.
She was savvy.
She was savvy but subtle, I think.
Yes.
Jeez, these companions.
Yes. And they can do, three companions can work, but it's rare because the first Doctor had the three companions. But Barbara and Ian were just a classy act. That was so good.
Yeah, and they had that history together. So they bounced off of each other
really well all
the time.
Susan, you know, they were very protective of Susan, but it was actually the second companion that he rescued from an alien, and Vicky was great. And there's a really good rapport between the three of them. So it can work with a good writer and good director, but it's the only time it's ever worked, I think.
Mm. I mean, there was River, Amy and Rory. Yeah. I know that's later stuff, but that was actually written really well.
It was. She was a companion, but she wasn't. She was kind of like, she would kind of come in and she kind of came in and out as she felt like it. She wasn't
she was a cat.
Part of, she was. She was almost like this trickster deity, wasn't she?
The other thing is that Amy and Rory had that relationship. They had that strong bond and bounced off of each other constantly. And were constantly together.
Yeah.
And if they weren't together, then that was their primary goal in the narrative, was to get back together and meet up again.
And they both took moments of being the peanut and having their own funny moments. Yes. Like, it was shared. It's not just on the onus of someone constantly eating at a buffet.
That's the
thing.
And that's
the thing, there's no humour in this. And that's something that was marked in that. So Tom Baker, there was a lot of humour and there's strong horror elements in a lot of the stories. And when Nathan Turner took over, he wanted to get rid of all the humour, rid of that horror stuff as well, make it really science fiction focused, which
is very Chibnall.
Which I think Chibnall, that's what he thinks Doctor Who should be as well. There was just no humour.
Yeah.
In that final episode, I don't think there was a single moment where I smiled or something was funny. There was zero humour.
Yeah.
The only time I did laugh was when someone asked, like, if he murdered the person. All the doctor could think of in his defence was say, no, of course I didn't do it. Why not? Oh, because it's not very cricket.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's an eye roll. It wasn't funny.
It was cringy.
It was cringy.
Yes.
And it's like, that is the moment in the entire two-parter that you've chosen to put a joke in. And it's just awful.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It was flat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So I feel like if it was written by Chibnall, I believe, it would have a timer on it and go for one episode.
Yeah.
It should probably be improved.
So were all of the episodes two-parters in this
era? No, this is the only two-parter, which is why I picked it.
Why?
It wasn't necessarily the best of Peter Davison. Actually, apparently The Caves of Androzani, which I haven't watched, his final episode is really good and it's a fan favourite. It's often voted as one of the best stories. Caves of Androzani, his final, and that's supposed to be really good. So I haven't watched all of Davison's era. As I said, I left home and then I've never had a chance to watch them since. So I've only watched a couple of The King's Demons, this one, and of course The Cybermen, Renadric Gets Killed.
Logos, City of Logos.
No, Logos is Tom Baker.
I thought
that's Caves of Androzani.
So I thought this was a two-parter because they were all two-parters. No. Really, this could have been one episode.
Absolutely.
There was so much stretched into it.
Well, it's still two parts. We can do both.
I think they've only done a single one-part episode. I think that was The Unearthly Child.
No,
there were four or five episodes.
Each episode had its own
title sort of thing, but it was very much on its own, in its own situation.
Yes,
and then the caveman
was a three-parter.
You can watch
it without watching anymore. Yeah, that's right.
There was no cliffhanger ending. It was just them showing the TARDIS arriving on the next planet.
That was the cliffhanger and the ending.
Yeah.
It was them arriving on another planet.
Yeah, but they do that at the end of most of the Doctor episodes.
Single episode rather than story. Like, there would be a story, but then they'd start the next story at the end of one. Yeah. So it was
different. Edge of Destruction, that was two episodes, wasn't it?
Yes. Yep. That's a good one, too.
They could have cut that cricket down to less than a minute.
Oh, absolutely.
They could have moved a lot faster when he was fumbling around in the secret passages. They could have made that one episode easy.
They had to stretch
that
for two episodes.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, that's what they had to do.
And the dancing. There wasn't actually any story progression in any of that stuff outside of the party.
No narrative at all. Tegan and Adric hang together and actually bounce off of each other in that scene, it wouldn't have felt as worthless.
Mm.
Like, Tegan could have gone, oh, okay, so this is what I know about the 1920s.
Yes.
And then explained Earth to Adric and the era of history, what was happening.
Instead, it was like, why are you eating so much? Yes. I don't know. Why are you eating so much? It's like,
And then talking with another different random individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just, they would just separated for no reason when they could have actually bounced off of each other.
Like the whole thing was filler.
Yeah.
There was, I think, an episode and a half of that was filler.
Yeah.
And it really could have just been absolutely one episode and moved faster and been short and sharper.
Yes.
We would have still probably rolled our eyes at it, but at least it wouldn't have felt so slow.
Well, they had two story elements. They had two, like, ideas for a story and then no story to go between them. It was like they had the Quasimodo idea and then the...
South American.
Oh, well, not even.
Well, that, not because he was part of the Quasimodo part. Yeah.
Quasimodo, and then the jumping between each other's costumes.
Oh, you know
what?
But even like that didn't really. No, that was a bit pointless.
It was magic
as well.
Cups and Quasimodo. That was
it. That's it. Yeah,
I'd much prefer to see this episode redone. Give a whole brand new take on it.
Yeah.
Bridgerton style.
Yes!
That would have been so much better than this.
Probably not great for this time slot, but...
There's a brilliant Eighth Doctor story, an audiobook that's set in a similar era with the companion. They go to the companion's house, but the companion was meant to pass away and die on, I think it was the Hindenburg or something like that, or one of those early Zeppelin's disasters. But the Doctor saved her. And because she was in the TARDIS, the timeline was confused because her future went from being set to just kind of a question mark because she disappeared from the Zeppelin.
Yeah.
But hadn't died yet. And she was travelling in time with the Doctor. And so that temporal backlash caused the mansion that she lived in to become semi-sentient as it absorbed Paradox energy.
God.
And... It was actually a brilliant story. Yeah. It was really well done, and it touched upon elements of like cosmic horror and stuff like that. Like really kind of explored
the capability of what Terry they could do. Into that.
It was a brilliant, engaging story. And the entire time, the doctor's going, whoops. Because he's responsible. He's trying to wrap it all up and just struggling. And it's just a brilliant story of the doctor basically putting out one of his own dumpster fires for once.
Okay, so I think we're both.
Yeah, sorry.
Angus has not decided what food this is.
I have decided what
food this is. Angus is not here to boycott your food decision tonight.
No. It's the food Adric was eating. It looked like the most overcooked, blandest, dry turkey that could possibly be imagined.
It's like dried turkey.
It looked bland, a bit like
food, and not like very well done to begin. Not very well done to begin with. It was just
so slightly overcooked turkey.
Dry. The sort of thing that just when you eat, just all the moisture in your mouth just disappears, and you're there going, I've got another. I've got a mouthful of this. I still need to figure out how to eat. And you're just there drinking a bottle of water as you chew, just to
it wasn't good. I did actually want to bring up this story because it is Who related. So Magic the Gathering, which is a card game that a lot of kids are playing and whatever, they recently released a Doctor Who
deck.
Paul McGann has a card for it. He has not seen this card before, and someone took it to a convention to get him to sign it. And he got so excited because there is a card with him on it. Yeah. There is actually something with him on it. That's how underappreciated he is as a doctor. He was excited. He had the person explain to him about the game, and then he took it out the back to all the other people and basically explained the card and was so excited.
Showing it off to all the
other people. And check this out. This is the card.
Meanwhile, the person who owns the card's like, I'm never going to see this card again.
But that was a shiny.
But I thought that was a really sweet thing.
I can imagine that scene in the Five-ish Doctors, actually.
They used to have a Doctor Who trading card game. And we used to get the Doctor Who cards because we're a nerd household. And originally,
about
it was just kind of Eccleston, David Tennant era. I don't think they got
it. Also, it was new school.
It was, New Who. But they did. It was a point, I think it was the end of Tennant, when there was not much coming out in the terms of Doctor Who, because they'd release a new deck every time there was a new series with all the new Doctor Who monsters and characters and yada, yada, yada. There was kind of this quiet period. So they went, okay, let's have a look at all the old Who stuff and do a bunch of old Who cards. But I don't know if they had a Paul McGann card. They had all the old doctors, but I don't know if they had Paul McGann. Because he was kind of not considered canon at that point in time. And he hadn't appeared in any new Who.
Moffat really made him canon when he did The Night of the Doctor, the regeneration scene, the minisode, which I loved. And I just remember when I saw that and that voice when he said, yes, the doctor, but not who you're expecting or something. And he steps in there and I was just, oh my God, it's Paul McGann.
I've seen that.
It's really
the doctor, but not the one you're expecting.
So that's when it goes from the Eighth Doctor to the War Doctor? Is that
Good. That little snippet, it's only 5 minutes, it's great.
And that's what we'll do instead of the film. We're doing
Cool.
The Five Ish Doctors. He's in the Five Ish Doctors.
I would argue doing both. I've never seen the film. I've heard that it's not good.
I would happily hate watch
we
anything.
And then I think compare it to McGann's delivery and stuff in the minisode. Because it's 5 minutes. The minisode, it's tiny.
It is.
But comparing them both would, I think, be really.
She doesn't want to watch it.
I don't want to watch it ever
this,
again.
This had the benefit of only being two episodes for 40 minutes total. The other one's a movie.
But it's probably, 90 minutes?
I have seen the movie. I enjoyed it, but I came in like during the new Doctor Who era and my partner at the time was like, oh my God, check this out. It's a movie. We watched it and we were like, I mean, it's fine. The only downside to it, and this is the only downside I remember there being, is that there was a Hollywood explosion and that was it.
And car chase and
yeah,
but like
compared to movies of that era, it was like your typical weekly
Hatch.
Yeah, that's it. Weekly hire at the video store.
Yeah, but it felt like something nostalgic and cozy kind of thing. Yeah. Like you could sit.
It felt like a movie from Video Easy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, you'd go to the movies on a Friday night. Yep. You pick up your rentals VHS. To watch for the weekend. Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with
that. So when are we watching this? When are we watching this movie?
Yeah.
Well, would be next year.
We're still Colin Baker and McCoy.
Yeah.
So in 3 years.
We've got three years. We can't because 2025 is the anniversary of New Who starting. So we can. I don't know how I'm going to squeeze it all in.
Maybe you can give us both the Sixth Doctor and Seventh Doctor stories in the same year.
Just so we have the benefit of next year
being able to quickly redeem Doctor Who with McCoy, because McCoy was very good and the companion was really good.
Okay, so that was the Cop TV Club. And we'll say goodbye from here.
Okay.
Bye.
I'm glad it's not me singing this time.